Do any of you fear that you may be unfairly treated by the criminal justice system here in the U.S.? See, it elicited some laughs. Research shows that many Americans do not trust our justice system. The National Center for State Courts reported in 2020 that 30% of registered voters distrusted the state courts. Pew Research also polled that only 26% of U.S. persons have a great deal of trust in police. And over the last few years, we've seen a number of incidents in the news that have caused or accentuated distrust in the criminal justice system. Now, many people feel that they are or may someday be unfairly targeted by police or court systems for several reasons. It could be religion, income bracket, race, political beliefs. I think we all know that our faith should not be placed in any government or bureaucratic system to fairly and justly protect us, but instead with God. And we should have faith that God will someday provide that perfect justice system that so many are seeking. So I just want to read off a couple scriptures that demonstrate God is a God of justice. Ecclesiastes 3:17, God shall judge the righteous and the wicked. Isaiah 30:18, for the Lord is a God of justice. Psalm 33:5, he loves righteousness and justice. The earth is full of the goodness of the Lord. So today, I would like to focus on a symbol of justice, something that guaranteed Israelites in biblical times a certain level of protection, and is a representation of God's justice to us, which we can have faith he will provide in the kingdom of God. So let's open up to Numbers 35. Again, that's Numbers 35. And we'll read verses 11 through 15. Numbers 35, verse 11. Then you shall appoint cities to be cities of refuge for you, that the manslayer who kills any person accidentally may flee there. They shall be cities of refuge for you from the avenger, that the manslayer may not die until he stands before the congregation in judgment. And of the cities which you give, you shall have six cities of refuge. You shall appoint three cities on this side of the Jordan, and three cities you shall appoint in the land of Canaan, which shall be cities of refuge. These six cities shall be for refuge for the children of Israel, for the stranger, and for the sojourner among them, that anyone who kills a person accidentally may flee there. So throughout the land of Israel, there were six cities of refuge. And these were for a manslayer to flee to, someone who killed someone accidentally. This is important because according to the law of the time, if someone murdered another person, the victim's family could legally avenge that person's death by killing the murderer. However, if the killing was accidental and was not murder, then there was a different punishment according to the law. This was the reason for these cities to exist, so that the manslayer or individual who accidentally killed another person could escape from the hand of the victim's family. So what happened once the manslayer got to the city of refuge? Well, verse 12 states they will stand before the congregation in judgment. This indicates some sort of a trial. So how does this trial go? How would the congregation judge the crime of the individual? Well, in verses 16 through 23, they describe several scenarios where murder and manslaughter are specifically differentiated. For the sake of time, I'm just going to go over a couple so we can get an idea of what kind of scenarios these are. So in verse 18, it describes an example of murder. It says, if he strikes him with a wooden hand weapon by which one could die, and he does die, he is a murderer. The murderer shall surely be put to death. And then verse 22 describes a scenario of manslaughter. If he pushes him suddenly without enmity or throws anything at him without lying in wait. Essentially, these scenarios are listed to help the congregation identify the intention of the killing and differentiating between intentional killing, murder, and accidental killing, manslaughter. These judgments were made based on witness testimonies. And that's in verse 30. Whoever kills a person, the murderer shall be put to death on the testimony of witnesses. But one witness is not sufficient testimony against the person for the death penalty. So then what happened after this trial? What would the result be for someone who fled to a city of refuge? Well, the second half of verse 21 describes the punishment if the individual is found guilty of murder. It says, he is a murderer. The avenger of blood shall put the murderer to death when he meets him. And again, that avenger of blood would typically be a member of the victim's family who is legally permitted to kill the murderer in this circumstance. If the individual is found to be a manslayer or they're guilty of accidental killing, that's covered in verses 25 through 28. So the congregation shall deliver the manslayer from the hand of the avenger of blood according to these judgments. So the congregation shall deliver, So the congregation shall deliver the manslayer from the hand of the avenger of blood, and the congregation shall return him to the city of refuge where he had fled, and he shall remain there until the death of the high priest who is anointed with the holy oil. But if the manslayer any time goes outside the limits of the city of refuge where he fled, and the avenger of blood finds him outside of his city of refuge, and the avenger of blood kills the manslayer, he shall not be guilty of blood, because he should have remained in his city of refuge until the death of the high priest. But after the death of the high priest, the manslayer may return to the land of his possession. So the murderer in this situation, at the end of the trial, the murderer is killed, and the manslayer is under some sort of house arrest inside the city of refuge until the death of the high priest. So what would this represent to ancient Israelites? This city of refuge, what would it represent? What would it look like from their perspective? Well, it provided several different things. One, it provided protection in waiting for a trial. It contained a potential murderer until the trial begins. It defined the law very plainly, so the congregation can judge it without any special or hard-to-obtain knowledge. It defined a clear difference between killing accidentally and killing intentionally, and showed Israel that why you do something can be almost as important, or even more important in some cases, than what you do. It guaranteed a fair trial with witnesses, which sets a high bar for imposing the death penalty. It guaranteed you couldn't buy your way around the law. This is covered in verses 31 and 32. Moreover, you shall take no ransom for the life of a murderer who is guilty of death. He shall surely be put to death. And you shall take no ransom for him who has fled to his city of refuge, that he may return and dwell in the land before the death of the high priest. No amount of money can get you out of paying the penalty for your actions under this law. It displayed that life is valuable. Whether the killing was murder or manslaughter, there was still a punishment. This is expanded on in verses 33 through 34. So you shall not pollute the land where you are, for blood defiles the land, and no atonement can be made for the land for that blood that is shed on it, except by the blood of him who shed it. Therefore, do not defile the land which you inhabit, in the midst of which I dwell. For I, the Lord, dwell among the children of Israel. Furthermore, this law showed Israel firsthand that God is a God of justice, and he will protect the innocent and punish the guilty. So what do cities of refuge mean to us today? How can we connect an ancient law regarding cities we've likely never been to our own daily walk? Well, it parallels with many things in our current justice system. Leading up to a trial, accused individuals are kept in protective custody in order to A, prevent them from running away, but also B, prevent them from being harmed before the trial. The accused will stand in front of a jury of his peers, and this congregation will decide based on eyewitness accounts and other evidence if the accused is guilty. But cities of refuge represent something that our justice system cannot replicate. regardless of how much money, reform, legislation goes into our criminal justice system, it will never be able to hold a candle to the perfect law and justice of God, which will be present in the world tomorrow. Psalm 97 describes this. Let's turn to Psalm 97, and I'm going to read a selection from that chapter to paint a picture of what justice will be like after Christ returns. Again, that's Psalm 97, and I'm just going to read a selection. Clouds and darkness surround him. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of his throne. A fire goes before him and burns up his enemies round about. The heavens declare his righteousness, and all the peoples see his glory. Zion hears and is glad, and the daughters of Judah rejoice because of your judgments, O Lord. You who love the Lord, hate evil. He preserves the souls of his saints. He delivers them out of the hand of the wicked. Rejoice in the Lord, you righteous, and give thanks at the remembrance of his holy name. The law regarding cities of refuge is a symbol and a guarantee of justice. It was to the people of Israel in ancient times, and it's a promise for us that when Christ returns, he will institute just law and order and deliver his saints from the hand of the wicked.